In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In the summer of 2001, I'd recently moved to New York City after leaving a position as a radio journalist in Tampa, Florida. At the time, I had set out to begin producing long-form radio documentaries. I'd gotten a lead on a story about a Maryland resident named Leon Kegarice, who had stacks of rare outdoor country music performances. Leon had recorded these shows throughout the late 50s and early 60s, setting up recording equipment on stage at Maryland's outdoor venues such as Sunset Park and New River Ranch. His collection was discovered by record store owner Joe Lee. Kegarice and Lee had spent hours listening to stacks of tapes and then digitally archiving them. On these tapes are unedited performances of country and bluegrass legends such as Patsy Cline, Johnny Cash, and Hank Snow before they were stars. Leon's collection offered more than a glimpse into the golden age of country music at a time when candid moments were rarely documented. He also recorded radio and TV shows when stations themselves weren't archiving their own broadcast. I took a bus from New York to Towson, Maryland. I stayed at a motel for a couple nights. Jolie picked me up and graciously drove me around to meet and interview Leon and others. This documentary project started a few months before September 11th, 2001. It's been more than two decades since this documentary aired, broadcasting on a few stations including WMNF, WMOT, and WPLN. The title of the documentary is Recording History. Let's have a listen.
Through the late 50s and the 60s, country music became big business. Musicians bought electric amps, the Grand Ole Opry became a mecca of country music, and honky-tonk music was gradually replaced with the smoother country pop. Regional differences began to blur as Southerners moved north to jobs in the urban areas, such as Washington, D.C., and they brought their songs with them.
For many years I've been a rolling stone, my darling. Like a gypsy, I have roamed the place.
By 1958, Leon Kegarice, a young audio technician from Maryland, began hauling a suitcase-sized reel-to-reel deck and microphone to record these outdoor country music shows. Leon, his wife, and kids would sometimes drive miles to the Virginia border to watch country music legends in their prime, some right before they became big stars. Over the years, Leon recorded and preserved the music of country stars such as Patsy Cline, Ernest Tubb, Johnny Cash, and Hank Snow. Since that time, Leon Kegarice stored his recordings, and for the next 40 years, they didn't emerge. I'm Ruth White. In the next hour, you'll hear some of these songs. Songs that up to this point haven't been replayed since they were recorded decades ago.
They didn't care if Leon Kegarice showed up with a big old tape recorder and a microphone and set it up right in front of the group.
I had a big Ampex recorder that was like a foot and a half by a foot and a half by 10 inches thick and weighed about 60 pounds.
I never saw my dad much when we were there because he was always setting up, doing his thing.
My mic was right behind the house mic. And so I was getting everything that the house mic got, and except getting it better because I had a lot better mic. I had an Electro-Voice mic, whereas they had a cheap mic.
He got the real thing. This is the way that these people really sounded.
Beer. About 2 years ago, a record collector came to my house by the name of Joe Lee. And he was busy looking at records. And then he saw a tape that said Johnny Cash, live, 1962, New River Ranch.
You know, I saw the stacks of tapes and reel-to-reels, and I'm looking at them, and I said, Johnny Cash, 1962. I said, Mr. Kagerice, can we hear this?
I said, sure. So I put it on my machine and played it.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down the slide.
And he liked to die. He says, do you know this recording's worth a lot of money, don't you? And I says, no.
And I'm looking at stacks and stacks of tapes, and I'm thinking, ay, 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 you know, here it is. Here's for the rest of my life, I have something to do.
And it may take a lifetime not only to listen to these tapes, but to find them. When Joe Lee first met Leon, he wasn't sure what to expect. You see, Leon is a lifelong junk collector. And when I say junk, that could mean a lot of different things indeed. But among the vintage fans, the mountains of records and magazines, the old radios and clocks, are stacks of reel-to-reel tapes.
What he told me about Leon is, he said, come on down here. We're buying 10,000 78s from this fella. And, you know, they said, you know, he's got 100,000, 150,000 LPs. And I said, well, let me get a crew. We'll come all down. And he says, no, you can't come down with a crew. You just have to come down alone. I said, well, with that amount of records, I'm going to need help. What are you talking about? He says, well, just come down alone because your crew is not going to fit in the house. And I remember driving down there thinking, what is this, some sort of a joke or whatever, you know?
Well, we're looking at records about to the ceiling. One, two, three, four, about five stacks. You okay?
At the time, three people would not fit in the house. Couldn't be done.
Among the mountains, narrow pathways are all that's left to shimmy through. Leon's family also had to cope with the clutter. His daughter Judy moved out and now lives a few blocks away with her husband, and she also stores some of her dad's treasures.
So he saved it all. Victrolas, speakers, all kinds of speakers, because it's an old house, and it has lots of, like, nooks and crannies. And then there were records and books and Life magazines from years ago and tubes down in the basement. There were lots of tubes with dust all over them. And some things I thought he could throw away, I just let him keep in my basement. But I think if I got rid of a few things, he would not know. I don't think he knows everything he has.
There's a box of 45s, and this is a box of 45s, and also it's got a lot of reel-to-reel tapes. I got reel-to-reel tapes all over the place. My dad was an electronics engineer for Bendix Radio, and he got me started originally when I was like 6 years old building crystal sets and so forth and learning basic electronics. Other kids were playing baseball, and I was building crystal sets. I enjoyed country music very much, and I went to the country music ranches here around town here, which were primarily Sunset Park and New River Ranch in this Baltimore area. And I went there about 2 or 3 years, enjoyed the music very much. And one day a light struck me. And I thought, well, I have a recorder at home.
Paul Williams, one called Little Georgie Rose.
Why don't I bring this thing here and record? So I did that one day. I brought the recorder along and a good microphone and set it up on microphone on stage.
I'd like to kind of take a break here. One of my favorite entertainers is Ernest Tubb, and he was one of my grandmother's favorites too.
The live music shows that he recorded off the stage are absolutely unique. They by far are the most important of all the recordings in his collection.
Author and historian Charles Wolfe.
The reason for that is that the music business in the 1950s and 60s, country music, did virtually no live recording at all. It was cumbersome. When they did do a live album, they made a big deal out of it, and they sent down 3 or 4 truckloads of equipment and a passel of engineers to New York, and it was pretty expensive to do a live recording, so there weren't simply many of them done. The ones that were released in the era of LP back in the 50s and 60s were quite often fake live recordings, where they had been done in the studio with dubbed-in applause. These are the real thing. The recordings that Leon did give us an idea of what the typical country music fan in the 50s and 60s actually heard when they went to a concert.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds, because you're mine, I walk the line. As you're as bright as dark and day as light, I keep you on my mind both day and night. And happiness I've known proves that it's right, because you're mine, I walk the line.
Yeah, this Johnny Cash show is, I've heard different people say that was one of the best performances that he ever did in his life. And he was very strong, and he was very young, and he just did a wonderful job, and everything was right. There was the right setting, the right crowd.
A lot of people have tried, and not many people have ever been able to come up with a good live recording of anybody, unless you had all the equipment and expertise that a record company had. But this thing sounded like it was recorded yesterday. It was fabulous.
At my door the leaves are falling, a cold wild wind will come. Sweethearts walk by together, and I still miss someone. I go out on a party and look for a little fun, but I find the darkened corner, 'cause I still miss someone. Oh, I never got over those blue eyes, I see them everywhere. I miss those arms that held me when all the love was there. I wonder if she's sorry for leaving what we'd begun. There's someone for me somewhere, and I still miss someone.
The first time I saw Johnny Cash, I think he was probably about 24 years old. I mean, these guys were in a prime.
Fine guitar player Luther Perkins. Let's make a look.
Yeah.
you turn and look back to me and they say, you fool you, I mean, I fool you.
Johnny Cash played New River Ranch. New River Ranch, I'll show you a picture in there. New River Ranch is basically $75 worth of lumber. It's a little crappy makeshift stage, planks on cinder blocks, and yet every major great country and bluegrass group and artist in the world played this place. What most Americans did for entertainment back then is they went to places like New River Ranch and Sunset Park, you know, thousands of them on a weekend, on a Saturday, on a Sunday, and they would sit there and watch music all day long, and you never heard a word about that in the media. You never heard a word about that. If you go back and look at the Washington Post, the New York Times, and most of the newspapers, there's not a word about any of this. But this is what most Americans did for entertainment. It seems odd to me.
Her mother left her for another. A carefree life she had planned. The baby now is a lady. The one her mother could not stand.
There is a large coterie of people in Washington that are kind of embarrassed about bluegrass and country music. Recently, there was a station in Washington that had a couple of wonderful drive-time bluegrass shows that got canceled because the new management felt it was embarrassing for the nation's capital to have twanging fiddles and guitars on their radio stations.
You'll get an awful lot of pleasure out of playing this brand new Hound Dog Talking harmonica. They're the most unusual, the most expensive, and the most beautiful harmonica that we've ever had the opportunity to send out to you anywhere. They've got the new oval-shaped air chamber that is something new and different. It's a new invention. So you can't afford to turn this sale bargain down. These makes the perfect gift to give to anybody, and I'm enclosing my play-by-ear instructions with each and every harmonica you order. We'll see you tomorrow on the great big jamboree here at WCKY. And until then, this is Wayne Rainey saying so long, good luck to you, and may the good Lord bless you.
So part of the problem is that Washington was just not able to overcome the growing yuppiness of their development. And so the music scene in Washington, which was so impressive from 1945 to about 1960. Those guys eventually drifted away. Some of the bluegrassers stayed, but many of the people like Roy Clark and Billy Grammer and Jimmy Dean eventually drifted away to other venues.
How good were these guys on these stringed instruments? They were top-notch. They were unbelievably good, and they played 7 days a week. That's all they did. And they got to the point where they could play their instruments like rolling off a log, doing anything they wanted on that instrument. They were that good. And if you take the redneck part out of it, and if you take the bad politics and the bad grammar and the just concentrate on the music alone, you can't beat it. You just can't. Their brains came out of their hands onto those stringed instruments. A lot of these country and bluegrass musicians were in the late 50s and early 60s at the top of their form. at just their at their greatest, at their apex of talent.
Most of these recordings were made in outdoor settings at the New River Ranch in Rising Sun, Maryland, and Sunset Park in southern Pennsylvania. Areas where rolling green hills were covered with a hammock of old trees that sink low in valleys and continue out to the horizon. Kagari says that thousands flocked to see performers such as Hank Snow, Patsy Cline, and George Jones.
I like rock and roll all right, and I listen to it to an extent, but I like country music about 10 times better, and I listen to that a lot more. So if my friends in high school knew that I loved hillbilly music, they would have made fun of me, because it wasn't quite the in thing back then. Rock and roll was the in thing, especially for kids.
You have to understand, Leon is a very trusting soul, a beautiful cat. I mean, he's the greatest. I've never had an argument with him. We enjoy each other's company and all that, but I know how Leon is. And Leon, you know, goes trotting to the teen club at high school way back when with a Flattened Scruggs record and gets laughed out of the teen club. They've got their Jimmy Clanton record or, you know, their Elvis record, their Carl Perkins or whatever, and he's got their, you know, this Flattened Scruggs, this hillbilly group, you know, and they're going, get that stuff out of here, you know, you dumb farmer.
So I had to sort of listen to it without letting them know that I enjoyed it. I'd listen to it in the evening, and I'd listen to their music through the day in high school. So I worked it that way.
Now don't judge me guilty by the word going round that I've been seen a day all over town. The things I've been doing are no fault.
I saw Patsy Cline in, I think it was in the mid-50s, 56, I think. Pin me to a year, I think it was 56. They had an opening of a shopping center near me, the Hillendale Shopping Center, which is, I live right behind it right now, as a matter of fact. And they had a flatbed truck, and they had a local band. I don't remember who it was. Yes, I do. Tex Daniels and the Lazy H Ranch Gang. They had a five-minute show on a local AM station every day around supper time, and they sold some records. They had a new star, a new female singer, and nobody had heard of her at that point, and her name was Patsy Cline.
This Wednesday, Patsy Cline at the Kingsdale Fire Department in Littlestown, Pennsylvania.
She was just so far apart from other singers. She had her own style, and it was a very, very unusual style. And it was a haunting voice that you would want to hear over and over.
I love you so much, it hurts.
And I would give anything for a recording of it, but I didn't have a tape recorder. I was just there listening at the time. In fact, I didn't even own a tape recorder at that point.
Rick Nelson hasn't heard these early songs since they were performed. He was Patsy's backup dobro player.
You got to realize that we never heard those. That was live. So we didn't have the pleasure of sitting down and listening to that until 40 years later. Because we had no idea what it sounded like at all. Most of that stuff on the television show was never recorded, so Leon happened to record it as an audio tape off the television show.
Right now we're going to have Patsy Cline and Let the Teardrops Fall. Okay, Patsy.
I have Patsy Cline doing songs she never recorded. Several. And people have heard them and wept.
You said you wasn't gonna call. You didn't love me at all. So let the teardrops fall. Since you've been gone, I've been so blue. And I spend my time just thinking of you. Well, sitting here at home by my telephone, hoping you'll change your mind. Well, it's you a dream of and I need your love. So tell me you'll be mine, cause the sun won't shine and the tears won't fall.
And we used to do stuff to Patsy all the time. You know, she'd say, give me a B-flat, and we'd give her an A. We'd go down a little bit lower, and she'd sing a little bit lower and kind of bottom out on the songs. And then the next song, she'd say, give me a B-flat, and we'd give her a C. We'd go up a little higher, and she'd squeak. And she never knew that we did that. I don't know how she would have taken that, but it was a lot of fun that we had a lot of fun doing it, I know that.
And the moon it won't glow, and the lonely night all passes slow. Sweet memory, I still recall, but I miss you so. So let the teardrop fall.
Peggy Bolger is the director of the Library of Congress Folklife Center.
To get the live recordings of Patsy Cline and Johnny Cash when they were at the very beginnings of their career, when they were building their career, and to hear everything in that particular performance, from the fans rooting for them to their interactions with the fans, their bantering.
Right, something's wrong with that.
It's not the way you say it.
Well, what's wrong with it? That's the way I learned it when I went to school. Mary had a little lamb fleece, but it snowed everywhere Mary went, the lamb went too.
That is incorrect. You want me to show you the correct way to do it?
If you think you know more than I do, just go right ahead.
Stand over there and observe. Observe.
I ain't observed, I preserved. In fact, I'm pickled.
These live shows were unbelievable. I mean, you never know what was going to happen. They were all very, very different, and that's what made them so good and so entertaining. During the Stanley Brothers, one of the shows that I was taping, they get stung by a bee.
The Stanley Brothers, up until 1966 when Carter died, could not be beat. It was the definition of high, lonesome, country, old-timey music. If you listen to it closely, they're being attacked by a bunch of yellow jackets.
They stop playing and start swatting bees. And I got it all on tape, of course.
You can hear it, right? Can we get some stalk spray up here? Get some DDT. And they're outside in this primitive place. And these things are buzzing them like, just, you know, and there's probably some kid spilled a sticky drink on the stage or something like that, and they're zooming in on that stuff. 1961.
Anybody ever found that yellow jacket's nest? If they do, let's tear it up after a while. We get some newspaper, burn it out.
got any stop spray or anything happen.
One time there was skunks had let loose under the stage, and the poor performers, they were taking gas because they couldn't breathe. There was skunks let loose during a performance, and it was kind of embarrassing because, you know, the ranch was so country that things like that happened often, and the show was over after that. A performance at Sunset Park where there was a big lightning storm and the electricity had gone off for the afternoon, and Roy Acuff was playing, and it was nighttime, it was after dark, so the sound system of course was gone and the lights were gone, and Roy Acuff used a flashlight so that he could see his guitar chords and his face. Those are the kind of shows you remember.
Most country music fans got their country music from venues like the New River Ranch. In medium to small concert stages, none of the big arenas like we have today, none of the great big huge package tours.
There were benches under the roof where the stage was, and you put your lawn chair over the benches. So you'd have to get there early to get your lawn chair over these benches so you'd have a good seat.
There was picnic benches there. If you got there early, you could set yourself up a picnic bench and call it yours for the day.
And then after you get your lawn chairs there, then you could go have a picnic, and that was fine.
They had a cooker there. You could barbecue all day long, bring your own food. If you had a car full of kids, it was $1 for all day.
We usually fell asleep in the back of the car. I was so exhausted, except for one very special day. My dad was very into the Stonemans, and I remember hearing them growing up, and I loved Donna Stoneman. I saw a picture of her. I thought she was really cool because she had those leather boots, white boots that went up to her knees, and I wanted to meet her, and he took me on the bus when they got there, and I got to meet her, and this is when I was 5, and then that same day, I got to dance on the stage with her, and my dad has pictures of me dancing on the stage.
Donna Stoneman on the mandolin was as good as anybody.
I'm going to do one, a small composition. In fact, this is the first time I've ever done it. And I did this for our TV producer, who is a great, great friend. Not only does he put us on television, but he's a great friend. And I did this, I wrote it after him. His name is Jingo Forth, and I call this By Jingo.
Monroe was quoted as saying he would never want to come on stage after she had played. That's Bill Monroe saying that. Jethro Burns, who was a first-class mandolin player, was on the Johnny Carson show back in the 60s, and Johnny Carson asked him, well, who do you think's the best mandolin player you've ever heard? He says, oh, Donna Stoneman.
One of the great groups that Leon recorded over and over again was the Stoneman family. Pop Stoneman started making records back in 1924, and he made the first recording about the Titanic, only a few years after the Titanic went down. And his family continued to grow.
Pop Stoneman, Ernest Stoneman, the old man of the group who, you know, started recording in 1924, and he had, it seemed like, zillions of children, 13 of which survived. You know, they were all musicians, and one wonders how an old guy like that can get an entire family playing at such a professional level. And Pops was very smart. He and Hattie, his wife, they got all the instruments together and they tuned them all up and they laid them out on the bed in their room and they called the kids into the room. And they said, "Kids, me and Hattie, we're going out for a while. You see those instruments there on the bed? Don't touch them." And of course, the second they left, they picked up the instruments and started playing them and never really put them down.
The Rockabye Boogie. Here we go, Donna.
Rockabye Boogie.
Just come from our big lawn party at WARL. We've been over there this afternoon with the Bluegrass Champs and Roy Clark and lots of others. We had about 3,000 people. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough room. We had to turn a lot of people away. Lou Childrey was one of them. But I told him we'd get him on next week. Let's get underway with the grand old man in country music. He's been on records longer than anybody else, 37 years. And here he is, Pop Stoneman. He's going to sing for you a real good one called The Little Cabin Home on the Hill. Nice big hand for Pop. Here we go.
Pop Stoneman. He's going to sing a nice favorite gospel song entitled Where the Soul Never Dies.
Pop, a lot of times, he was a very interesting guy, and he liked to talk. And I would talk to him sometimes for an hour between shows. And he would just tell me about his early life, everything, all the road experiences, the stolen microphones, the broken down buses, and the just all kind of stories about his early recording career. He just loved to talk about it. So I gained quite a rapport with Pop Stoneman and the entire Stoneman family. They were all very nice people. And not only did they let me record them, but they act like they wanted me to record them. And I think if I hadn't recorded them, if I were up there without my recorder, I think they would have been disappointed.
It's all good.
There's a singing waterfall in the mountains far away. That's where I long to be at the close of every day. That's where my sweetheart's sleeping.
You know, it runs chills up and down your spine when you hear it, and it's a kind of song you want to hear often. Very I can't even. It's very, very sad, deep song, a very sorrowful song.
Tonight, my darling, sleeping by the singing waterfall.
They were doing mainstream country, they were doing heart songs, they were doing old-time fiddle tunes, and they were even doing some experimental, what we today would call newgrass or jazzgrass, with Scotty Stoneman's fiddle. And they represented the entire gamut of country music and in many ways epitomized the kind of show that Leon captured on those wonderful tapes.
When I heard the Stoneman Family, I just stopped. And that's all I listened to for about half a year. I mean, they're just a big, white, trashy family of just gawking. I mean, they're so full of personality and fun, but they're so unsophisticated and goofy.
You don't think I know karate? All you do is badmouth me. Well, I seen you the other day with your girlfriend. She looked just like me, and you and her walking down a street looks like a string of spaghetti and a meatball.
Let me tell you something, Ronnie. You've got the brains of an idiot. She
I know, fat boy. Do you want them back?
Don't laugh. You'll just make her worse. Here's one we'd like to do for you. A little song that everybody's included in, even Jim here. One entitled White Lightning, number 2. A jug and it pice it all around. Was mighty, mighty freezing. My pipe was corn squeezing. Why, lightning? Well, a team and a team and a vamp and nurse too. Searching for a place where he made his brew. They were looking, trying to book him, but my pipe kept on cooking. Everybody get real quiet now. Let's ask someone who knows what they're talking about, what they think of white lightning. Let's ask one of those grand old Opry stars. They sure know what they're talking about. Let's ask Kitty Wells. Hey, Kitty Wells.
Meow.
We want to know what you think of white lightning, Kitty Wells.
I can't get enough of that wonderful stuff. I don't care what people say.
Oh, Lord, yes, she sure knows what she's talking about.
This is all one family, and they could all play every instrument on stage and play it well. There was no better fiddle player that lived than Scotty Stoneman. There just was not.
Fella pulling in a little highway with a big load of logs on his old truck. As he tries to get started, it makes a little grinding or shifting gear sound something like this. Then a fella blows his horn for him to get out of the way.
Jimmy Stoneman on bass, first class, I mean, killer, almost a jazz bassist. Could have played with Duke Ellington or something had he wanted to. Or, you know, he couldn't have because he never read music. On banjo, you had Ronnie Stoneman, who was one of the most entertaining people on earth. When the whole, you know, music thing sort of crapped out for him, you know, she got on TV for 17 years on Hee Haw. She was the ironing board lady.
Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
Jimmy Dean Show.
AM and FM in Wheeling.
So send as many guys as you like. Send right away to...
Leon also devised a way to record the radio and television directly to his tape machine in the late 50s.
Okay.
He captured the early productions of small radio stations that sprang up across the southern United States.
WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia. That's color contest. WWVA Wheeling, West Virginia.
Oh, gee, it sounds swell. What do you want me to do?
No, lady.
I had my own radio, an old tube radio that brought in all over the world. An old Apex radio, which was my folks' radio when they were young. And I heard this station called WCKY Cincinnati, Ohio.
The music played on WCKY.
And I heard Wayne Rainey on there, and I just about fell off my chair, because this is, hey, I really like this stuff.
So we don't have preservation of a great deal of the early live radio shows. It's just like we don't have preservation of much of the live popular radio shows. Unless somebody happened to be recording the show, that stuff is gone forever.
WVA, AM, and FM in Wheeling.
Friends, you play your records when you receive them. And if you are not absolutely satisfied in every way with them, just return them to Rainey's Record Shop and your $3.98 will be refunded promptly and cheerfully.
Commercials are just as intriguing as the shows. I mean, this gives us a feeling of what it was like back in the 40s and 50s to be, you know, at a country music show or listening to the TV and the radio. It's really fascinating to us now. 15, 60 years later.
To record the radio or the television, there's only one way to do it, and that's to get into the circuits and use a shielded cable with a ground and a hot lead in the center so as not to get hum or interference.
And he, before each one of these shows, he would go out and, you know, would tweak that antenna, look at the TV, come back outside, tweak it a little bit more. That's just right.
Sun Papers Television, Channel 2, Baltimore.
Now, here's Leon doing that before each show, and you've got thousands of hours of, you know, that I've found anyway. That's a lot of tweaking.
Well, you ought to heard him, that old-time preacher man. That's on page 102 of our Heavenly Call hymn book. Boy, it's a long one. It takes about 2 pages to get all that song in the book. Complete with words and music in shape notes, and it has 155 songs in all. And friends, this Heavenly Call hymn book was without a doubt the nicest hymn book that you will ever have the privilege of receiving for only a dollar.
We didn't think that there would be any way we would ever go back and recall those. They were gone forever.
WWVA, AM and FM in Wheeling, West Virginia, a basic communication station. Time now for headline news. The State Department said Tuesday its position not to seek a wider war in Southeast Asia, as suggested by South Vietnamese Premier Ky, is unchanged. U.S. 25th Division infantry troops 20 miles southwest of Saigon suffered only light casualties Tuesday night from a two-hour-long bombardment by communists.
Radio still was, in the 50s and 60s, a regional culture, and it did reflect the tastes and the interests of the local people. When you went down into Louisiana, you could still hear Cajun music on the radio. When you went up into Missouri, you'd hear Red Foley and the guys who were on the Ozark Jubilee. When you went into the WSM in Nashville, you would hear Hank Williams or Carl Smith or Kitty Wells. So you would still have, if you could imagine driving coast to coast in 1959, it would be a smorgasbord of music at these different radio stations.
Tobacco is an Indian weed, and from the ground it do proceed.
You get the best possible guarantee when you buy where the crowd buys and start the new year right with the purchase of a Johnny's car today or tonight.
It's Saturday Central, your WAVA companion into the great outdoors.
And this was good for country music because at the time, if country music had depended only on records, it would have died because rock and roll totally knocked the bottom out of country music records. So these radio stations were in many ways the ones that kept it alive, and they had to do a fighting rear guard action to do it because more and more of the owners were saying, let's switch over to rock and roll, or let's bring in 5 hours of rock and roll and then play country. And some of the stations hung on to the real country sound, and so this helped country music survive the storm and emerge into the 60s stronger and better than ever.
This is AM radio. It's 1956, which was a long, long time ago. So this is, I'm sure, the only copy that exists in the world.
Here's Tex Cherry to do for the Fox Chase. Tex Cherry, give him a nice big welcome. Tex, here we go.
All aboard, you can't get aboard, just grab old Pine Knot, cause here we go. Fox chase, I'll tell you what to do. Get yourself a trusty gun and a dog or two. Get on board the Cannonball and surely you will see that we'll chase a doggone fox from back to Tennessee.
Radio going into World War II, most radio stations were powerhouse stations of 50,000 watts, and they were almost like networks. Then right after the war, there was a tremendous loosening of radio licenses, and all of a sudden, all of these little towns of 10 and 15,000 people had their own little radio station.
How about doing a song?
Let's do no help one. I'm going to need you all to help me.
We'll help you.
Okay?
All right. Yeah. I'd like to call on Bill Harrell to do a real pretty song for you. We've had many requests for him. We'd like to thank all of you for writing us your cards and letters and telling us what you'd like to hear on the Reno and Harrell show. Thanks a million. Here's Bill to sing A Good Woman's Love for you.
Let's move along with the young fellow who's joined the Bluegrass Champs. He used to be with Bill Monroe, but we're paying him more, and he doesn't have to drive too much. Jack Cook, and he's going to sing for you, Put My Little Shoes Away. Jack?
Stoneman's guest for this particular trip is a little lady that arrived in Nashville just a few short months ago, and since that time, she's nailed down a recording contract with Epic Records and has a couple of hits to her credit already. She's from down in Alabama, and I'll tell you, this gal, she sounds like a rainbow looks to me. And I know you're going to dig her here this here today, too. So what do you say? Let's bring her on right now. The Stoneman's special guest, Miss Tammy Wynette, and a tune entitled Your Good Girl's Gonna Go Bad. Not long ago, Leon attended a local country music reunion cookout and met some of the musicians he had recorded some 40 years ago. Needless to say, Leon was thrilled.
See, this is crazy for me because I recorded these people and I went to the ranches and everything. And I never met the people before, and here 40 years later, I'm meeting the people that made the music that I've been loving for 40 years. This is kind of wild for me. This is like I died and went to heaven, you know.
This documentary was created and produced by Jeff Brady, with thanks to WMNF in Tampa, John Egley at WMOT in Tennessee, the Library of Congress, and music historian Charles Wolfe. I'm Ruth White.
You just heard a documentary that I produced in 2001 titled Recording History. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.